You're about to hear one of the most familiar voices on public radio. What you might not have known is that it belongs to an award-winning journalist who got his start right here at MSU. Current State's Russ White has more.
So the first time I sat behind a microphone and recorded something onto tape was here at Michigan State University, and it was in Gary Reed's class, Introduction to Radio Production. I think it was a 201 level class.
That's Michigan State University alumnus and National Public Radio national political correspondent Don Gagne, whom you hear almost daily on WKAR radio.
And I had been the band announcer in high school and the PA announcer in high school, and I'd always kind of thought maybe I would have a career in broadcasting or something. But I sat down in that room and put something onto a reel-to-reel tape and listened back to it. And I should have quit right then and there. And I played it for Gary Reed, and he won't remember this, but he remembers it because he does this with every student, going back. And he was like, okay, here's what you need to work on. You should try. And I came back for another day, and I came back for another day. And I don't think I ever got what you would call good. But something spoke to me. Something spoke to me. And that little spark I got here at Michigan State.
Gagne is a 1980 graduate of Michigan State University with degrees in both advertising and telecommunication.
I left here 35 years ago or thereabouts. And you carry the place with you everywhere you go. You just do. And when I was working in Detroit for many years, obviously I would bump into Michigan State graduates. But then I got to the White House Press Corps in Washington, and I was struck by the fact that those of us traveling in this relatively small bubble of reporters covering the President of the United States, there were all kinds of Michigan State University journalism graduates in there. And that was the first time that it really hit me. That the reach of this school in my profession was so significant. No, I wasn't a journalism major, so maybe if I had been a journalism major, I would have known that while I was a student here. But graduating from this place and the things that I learned here with professors like Gary Reed, we're still friends today. And I've told him that the things I do every day at National Public Radio are things that he taught me to do when I was here at Michigan State.
Despite the quantum leaps in technology that allow us to enjoy Don and his colleagues' work in a variety of ways that suit our own preferences, Gagne says,
radio is not dead. Millions and millions and millions of people tune in every day. NPR's audience is in excess of 30 million very loyal listeners. We know how loyal they are every single week. So if you look at that as a percentage of the U.S. population, that's huge. But the way people are using this medium and getting the content that we produce for the radio is changing.
Gagne says National Public Radio's strategy to maintain and grow listeners in this new world of technology involves a renewed focus on telling good stories.
We are learning at NPR that our new listeners increasingly don't own or have never owned a radio. Even cars don't necessarily include a radio as standard equipment these days, as they once did. So that changes very much kind of how we perceive ourselves if we only think of ourselves as coming to people on this thing that, has circuits in it and pulls signals out of the air. I like to think of radio as just an oral medium for telling stories. And to me, radio is, yes, I still tune in my, public radio station on the FM dial or the baseball game on the FM dial when I'm driving around. But increasingly, if I'm listening to a baseball game, it's streaming off my iPhone through the MLB app. And I still get to listen to Dan Dickerson call the Detroit Tiger games. Is that radio? Technically, I guess it's not, but it is to me. It's the same. So it means we have a lot more competition, though, because we used to just be competing against the other radio stations. Now we're competing against every podcast, everything that people can do on their iPhone, looking at YouTube, looking at the latest clips from Comedy Central or whatever. So there's more competition out there, but all it means is we need to figure out ways to be great storytellers and to create compelling product. And National Public Radio and NPR News is doing that by continuing our commitment to great audio storytelling. But every radio audio story that I do also has a web version, so people can pull it up on a screen and read it as well. There are photographs and sometimes video accompanying those stories. NPR also does a lot of podcasting, things that never appear on the quote-unquote radio programs that we produce. All of our radio programs also exist as podcasts that can be listened to in their entirety, or they can be broken up into their individual component parts. So we wouldn't have recognized it if we looked back or looked ahead to this day from 1979 or 1980 or 1976 when I was in Gary Reed's radio production class in the Student Union building here. But I prefer to think of it as still just great storytelling that we deliver through whatever means possible.
Don Gagne cut his broadcasting teeth at WKAR at Michigan State University in East Lansing and at WDET in Detroit before heading to our nation's capital to cover the George W. Bush administration for NPR. He's now traversing the country covering the 2016 presidential election as national political correspondent.
I've covered every U.S. presidential election since 2000 full-time, and I had a piece of earlier elections. And it is pretty stunning how much the way we cover elections has changed in that time. But the changes, while they have been very, very significant, you know, they've come along at a certain pace, and you just adapt to each one as it arrives. I remember sometime after the 2000 election getting my first BlackBerry. And it was like, oh, I can get email on the bus. And then I remember riding in the pool van with the press pool following George W. Bush around as he drove from the White House in his limo. We were in the van in his limo up to Walter Reed Medical Center to visit some troops there. And all of the White House photographers, you know, from Newsweek and Time and the Wire Service were in that van with me. And we were on our way back to the White House, and they had their laptops up. And as we drove, they were looking for Wi-Fi signals coming from houses or buildings as we drove past so they could grab that signal and upload their photo. And I remember thinking, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. We're in this van and they're sending their photos and they're sending it wirelessly, even though we barely even used that term, because of something that's coming from that building that's parked there next to this red light that we're stopped at. And I remember thinking that was just crazy, you know. And now we're all, you know, tweeting Instagram pictures, and I'm jumping way ahead, but obviously, you know, we got to the point where we quit plugging in our computers with the little phone line that we would order in the press filing center, and now we've got hotspots and this and that, and that's just the technology, but the technology affects the storytelling. So now I'm in an event, and yes, I will do a radio story kind of recapping Jeb Bush's 12 hours in New Hampshire, and that story will air on the radio sometime after those 12 hours have completed. But along the way, I've posted a half a dozen photos to Twitter. I've posted Instagram photos. I've tweeted significant quotes along the way. I've already started telling the story and sharing the story with my listeners, that's not even the right word, right? With the audience, before I ever sit down to start writing the story. So it requires that you be in storytelling mode the whole time and always looking for moments. And the trick is, and I think
I think I've made the transition, but you're always aware that you're doing it, and you're always trying to make sure that you're in the moment. So I'm in the moment. I'm still watching the event. I'm still covering the event, but I have the ability to take 30 seconds and share this thing that just happened. So we're multitasking, obviously, but it's even more than that. It's not just doing that and doing this and doing this. It's figuring out the way to tell this story over the entire time that you're there. So that's the thing that's probably most different. The other thing is just the nature of the press corps itself is changing. And, I came up in radio and kind of branched out to these other areas from there, but I still think of myself as primarily a radio reporter. And now we have, journalists doing jobs that didn't exist. They're working for news organizations, BuzzFeed and, Slate and whatever. Though Slate feels like a venerable old place right now, doesn't it? Politico, for gosh sake, didn't exist back then. So it creates different kinds of pressures, and there are different kinds of stories being told. And it's not as staid and institutional as it once was. It's a little more freewheeling. And sometimes we complain about that, and sometimes we revel in that, but that is what it is.
Just as advances in technology have changed the way Gagne covers his beat, he says the technology has also changed how politicians interact with the media and with the public.
It's funny, I get wrapped up in talking about how the job has changed and the industry has changed and how you adapt to it over the years. On the other side of it, the politics have changed, and the way politicians go about getting elected and running campaigns has changed really, really, really dramatically. Again, they're using all of these tools. There are things that they're doing that we would have kind of been aghast had they done it, 10 years ago. I'll get an email from the campaign, the reelection campaign of President Barack Obama. And the subject line will be, "Hey," or "Hey, Don," and then it's signed Barack at the bottom, and it's now I get that not because I'm a journalist. You've gotten those probably because I signed up with their email list to see what they're sending to people. So kind of the casualness and the attempt to kind of make a personal one-on-one connection with people via Facebook and all that. So all of that is happening. And I think related to that is the nature of this election itself, this campaign itself. I tell people everyone's different, and they are different. Every election is different. Every campaign is different. Boy, this one is sure different. And the fact that Donald Trump, a non-politician, celebrity, billionaire, real estate, reality show host guy is leading the way for the Republicans. But the candidates that we thought would be at the top aren't at the top. And candidates that we couldn't imagine would be at the top are at the top. And, we had a little taste of that 4 years ago when Herman Cain had his run at the top. And then Newt Gingrich was at the top for a while. And then Michelle Bachmann was at the top. But this is that to the nth degree. And some of it is because of all the money that can pour in. And there isn't the normal weeding out process. Some of it is the way these debates are really like reality shows in and of themselves, attracting huge audiences. There are a lot of incentives for people to jump in, which fragments the field even further, which allows someone with a relatively small percentage to get a lot of buzz because it puts them near the top of the field. And don't ask me to make any predictions as to not just how it's going to turn out, but what it's going to look like in 2 weeks. It's quite a thing to watch, and it's quite a thing to try to keep abreast of.
That's MSU alumnus and NPR national political correspondent Don Gagne. And I'm Russ White for Current State on WKAR.
Don Gagne, NPR News, East Lansing, Michigan.